The first session of this module is called Mindfulness. Fascinatingly, when you type the term mindfulness into the search engine of the Amazon online store, an incredible library opens up before you. No, it's not a tiny shelf of dusty titles, but a giant digital shelf containing over 3,300 books on the subject. Yes, really. With 3,346 books, they want to teach you how to be mindful. And here's where the fun detail comes in. You can be mindful about practically everything. You can mindfully cook, eat, lose weight, raise children, or even train your pets, from dogs to horses. And if that's still not enough, you can take your mindfulness even further, to your athletic performance, your employee management, or even your erotic experiences. Mindfulness seems to have an answer for pretty much everything you can think of. It's kind of that universal Swiss Army knife of virtues, and as many of its proponents claim, it can even cure various mental disorders. Great marketing, right? But what is this mindfulness that everyone's been singing the praises of? And why has it become such a hit? What literally sells? Let's pause for a moment on the concept of mindfulness itself. You may have heard somewhere that being mindful means living in the present moment. Super cliche, right? As if perhaps there's any other moment we can live in. But okay, let's give that slogan a chance. Mindfulness is usually associated with a certain ability to take in everything that is happening not only around us, but within us. Thoughts, feelings, bodily states, everything. We should simply observe what is going on in our inner world without judgment or evaluation. But beware. Here it comes. It's more complicated than it seems. Ask any expert what this all means, and you'll get dozens of different answers. Even the scientists themselves are not entirely agreed on what we mean by mindfulness. Sometimes they see it as a kind of stable personality trait, something that you either have or you don't, like a sense of humor, or the ability to blindfold a Rubik's Cube. Other researchers, on the other hand, see it as a skill, a specific ability that can be practiced and perfected, like stitching socks. Still others describe it as a mental process that must be consciously triggered. And then there are those who argue that mindfulness is simply a particular mental state, something that comes and goes, like a spring rain. In short, the definition is still somewhat vague, and there is no single explanation of how mindfulness works. So, even though we pretend to know everything from Western science, this time we're a little off. Now comes the fun part, the original source. Mindfulness actually comes from Buddhist teachings and has been a key part of various meditation techniques for centuries. Here, it's not just some cool skill for posting inspiring Instagram posts, but a carefully built element of spiritual practice. In traditional Buddhist meditation centers, mindfulness is taught by individuals who have been practicing the art their entire lives. Meditation masters spend endless hours, day after day, practicing mindfulness. Some of them have even gone through months-long intensive programs where they devote 14 to 16 hours a day to mindfulness. Yes, 14! You certainly won't see an influential corporate CEO doing this, even though his LinkedIn is teeming with inspirational quotes about mindfulness. These experienced teachers are thoroughly familiar not only with traditional texts such as the Visuddhimagga, a kind of Buddhist manual on mindfulness, but also know what mindfulness looks like in its various stages. They describe the differences between beginner, intermediate, and master in this area. Kind of like belts in karate, but with meditation instead of combat kicks. And unlike many of the popular books on Amazon, these teachers don't sell the illusion that through mindfulness you can make your life harmonious and cool in one meditation session. It's a process that takes time, commitment, and often very deep dives into your own inner self. And so it's time to look at mindfulness not just as a brand that sells courses and books, or as a fast track to happiness. Rather, it should be seen as a slow but hugely valuable process of self-discovery. Stop seeing it as just a marketing buzzword and take something from its traditional roots. Maybe then we'll stop obsessing so much about the number of books on Amazon and learn to just be sometimes. which, admittedly, may be more difficult these days than saying goodbye to social media, but it's worth it. Three levels of mindfulness. These levels are such a concept that gives us an insight into the essence of the phenomenon. People talk about mindfulness around every corner as if it's the new superfood for the brain. One bite will relieve you of stress, the next will brighten your day, and the last will even chase away annoying bosses or unruly kids. It's not that simple, of course, but I'd like to walk you through these three levels of mindfulness so you know how to better work with it, what to expect from it, and what to avoid. The first level is being present and focusing on your own mind. Focus on the present and don't believe everything you think. At first sight, it's a simple sentence that could easily be on the bulletin board of a smart cafe. But what does it actually mean? How do we focus on the present moment when we are bombarded daily with work, news, tasks, deadlines, and sometimes our own inner chaos? And what about that trust in our own thoughts? Let's break it down a bit. Let's start with the present. How many times a day do you even stop to realize that you are here and now? Most of us live like we're on a treadmill, always moving, but with our heads already several steps ahead. We're stressing about what needs to be completed next week, replaying an argument from last month, and in the meantime, we're missing the unique moment we're currently experiencing. Maybe right now you like to lean against the back of your chair, hear the clack of your keyboard, taste the last sip of tea. And yet, how much do you really notice these little things? The reason why focusing on the present is so important is that this is where life happens. That's not nonsense. It really isn't. In simple terms, you can't change the past, the future doesn't exist yet, and the only thing you really have control over is what's happening right now. But while we're riding our mental merry-go-round of planning, remembering, and exaggerating, our brains are tricking us in a subtle way. Instead of being in the here and now, we're there and then. And that can cost us not only a lot of joy, but also our psychological well-being. And now the best part, our thoughts. If I were to sum up their essence as briefly as possible, I would probably say this: don't believe them. Yes, you hear right. Your own brain is the master of fabrication, or more precisely, of distorting reality. The mind has a tendency to make a mountain out of a molehill, paint black scenarios, or, on the contrary, criticize you unbelievably for things you would have forgiven your best friend for a long time ago. Have you ever fallen for yourself? Maybe by running a disaster scenario in your head that never happens? Or have you told yourself that you're not good enough when in reality you're shining like the summer sun? If so, congratulations. You are one of many people. This is where mindfulness comes in as such a kind companion for everyday life. The foundation is nothing more complicated than realizing that you are thinking right now and choosing not to take that thought as absolute truth. It's not easy, but practice makes perfect. There's no need to do anything worldly. Just stop for a moment. Try it right now. You don't have to meditate like a Zen monk, just a few seconds of really noticing. How do you feel? What do you hear? Are you comfortable? Don't think, just observe. Mindfulness doesn't make you stop thinking. You're not a robot for shutting down the main circuit. It's about being aware of the space between thought and reaction. Do you feel irritated? Fine, that's fine. But instead of an automatic outburst, try simply observing, "Oh, I'm irritated because I didn't get enough sleep today." Are you gripped by fear of the project deadline? Great, name it. Yes, I'm scared I won't make it. But that's just a thought, not a fact. Practicing mindfulness is like training at the gym. No need to start with a 45-pound barbell. Small steps lead to steady progress. Try starting by quietly enjoying the first taste of your favorite drink each morning, or when you go for a walk. Try noticing how your shoes tap the pavement or how the air smells around you. Presence doesn't escape you if you don't ignore it. And back to those thoughts. The truth is that if we let them drag us down, it can be like watching an old soap opera. Lots of drama and almost no point. Yet, when you learn to become more of a spectator of your thoughts instead of becoming them, you gain power. Think of your thoughts as not being a dictator. They are often just the brain's attempts to process the world, and they are not always accurate or productive. So what do we take away from this conversation? Focus on the present. Do so with openness and humor. And above all, don't believe everything your own head tells you. Breathe, feel, and don't be afraid to just ignore your thoughts sometimes. After all, as the classic said, don't take life so seriously. You won't make it out alive anyway. The second level, developing kindness and self-compassion. At level two, we start to delve a little deeper. So what does it mean to develop kindness and self-compassion? Let's face it, it may sound easier than it actually is. On the surface, it seems like something very noble. Being kind to ourselves, giving ourselves a break every now and then, and stop sprinkling ashes on our heads every time we accidentally have a second piece of cake. But when it comes down to it, honestly, who among us can really do that? Who among us, instead of loving acceptance, will begin to bring out a whip of criticism at the first failure that would make the toughest Spartan soldier weep? But let's start from the beginning. Developing kindness and self-compassion is closely tied to one essential skill, mindfulness. Now imagine this elegant definition. Mindfulness at this level is the ability to be aware of what is going on in our body and mind. But not just any awareness, but with an attitude of acceptance and understanding. No drama, no, why did I miss it again? No regrets. Just a quiet, interesting, coupled with a gentle nod of the head, even with a cup of tea in hand. So, what do you say? Could you do it? Now we'll get into the first key part of this whole discipline, process awareness. Okay, this may sound like a dry term from a corporate handbook, but don't worry, I'll explain it. Imagine you're having a flashback. An epic school trip from the days of youthful indiscretion comes to mind. You see your classmates, hear their laughter, maybe smell the old bus seats and wet grass. Cool. But mindfulness isn't about exploring memories like Sherlock Holmes searching for a lost diary. Mindfulness is about realizing that you're remembering, not what a great time that was, but aha, there's a process of remembering going on in my head right now. You know, that kind of noticing, hello, my brain is playing like it is Netflix and replaying the past. It is the same with other processes, such as perception. When you're looking at a sunset and your mind goes blank with bliss, mindfulness doesn't say, wow, what a beautiful orange-pink combination in the sky, perfect for Instagram. Instead, you just realize you're taking in a sunset, just the process, not the content. Why does the mind betray us? Resistance, clinging, and giant waves of ego defense. And here's where the interesting part starts. Because our mind often tends to throw sticks at us in the form of resistance or clinging. Yes, you had that right. The mind is such a little beast that either runs away like Usain Bolt from unpleasant experiences or clings to something pleasant like a little raccoon that won't let go of its favorite cookie. To make matters worse, our brains have one more extra skill, namely, ego defense mechanisms. These are the kind of psychological shelters that help us survive unpleasant situations without bringing us to the brink of a nervous breakdown. The problem is that they often distract us from what's actually happening to us. What is worse, it is even harder for us Westerners than for people from some Asian countries. Why? Well, we have slightly different habits and backgrounds. While in Southeast Asia, children are taught from a young age not to cling to things and to live at a more ethical and leisurely pace, we are often raised in the mode of perform and excel or else you fail. We are hard on ourselves and others, and we carry that into adulthood. As a result, when something fails, our kindness to ourselves takes a vacation, and we bring out the inner critic instead. Don't reach for the quick fix. This is a long shot. Here's a point that's not so easy to swallow. Developing kindness and compassion for yourself is not a miraculous 2-week detox. The wounds we pick up from childhood or adolescence don't resolve after a few weeks of mindfulness classes. While mindfulness meditation definitely helps, you can't expect to wave a magic wand and be a Zen master in 8 weeks. Often, deeper work is needed, whether in the form of therapeutic support or longer-term training in kindness practices. And yes, sometimes you may need to go through your own emotional reset, accompanied by a good psychotherapist. What does this mean? Don't give up. Be good to yourself even when you're not good at something. Try to stop judging yourself. And if you feel like you don't know how to do it, find support, whether it's in the form of coaching, books, or people who inspire and hold you up when you're not feeling your best. In fact, the process of developing kindness and compassion for yourself is one of the most beautiful yet profound journeys inward. The third level. Things are starting to happen here. If you think you've made transformational progress just by closing your eyes and taking a deep breath on your afternoon coffee break, you have a lot to learn. Level 3, which we're going to talk about now, is not just any relaxation event for your mental well-being. This is the League of Champions. Let's face it, this is a change so intense that it makes your old self look more like a videotape in the age of streaming platforms. It's like a complete reprogramming of the software. To reach this level, research shows that it takes a truly enormous amount of dedication and training. Practicing mindfulness here is no longer about the 2 minutes a day before bed when your mind is more on what to have for dinner. This level requires an incredible commitment, up to 12 hours of meditation a day, and not just for a few days, but for weeks. Imagine that. Your daily schedule would only include 3 activities at a time: meditation, food, and maybe a little sleep. And no excuses. They say you don't have time between work and Netflix. At level 3, you are literally a work camp of your own mind. And what actually happens during such a marathon meditation? Once you get through the initial hoops of your own impatience, emotional outbursts over spilled coffee, and longing for your cell phone, which you've since buried in the garden so it won't disturb you, your mind magically begins to clear like a dirty window after a long winter. The defense mechanisms we've carefully built up over the years, from "I didn't do it," to "it's the system's fault," to "but it's not that bad," slowly begin to crumble. Suddenly, you realize the truth. And that truth is, nothing lasts forever. It's not entirely satisfying. And what's more, none of what you think of as yourself is really yourself at all. Shock? Maybe. Freedom? Definitely. In traditional Buddhist terminology, this is called the realization of the 3 universal characteristics. Everything is temporary, nothing is permanent, and there is no fixed entity that we can call ourself. Yes, that's how stark the truth of the third level is. And if you are now thinking, "Well, that can't be true," know that scientists like Baerendrecht and Grabovac have already figured all this out before we had smartwatches to watch our breathing exercises. Their findings confirm that this level of consciousness is no joke and definitely involves a radical personality transformation. But beware, it doesn't stop there. It is at this level that we get to the real essence of radical transformation. Once your mind begins to turn away from these temporary phenomena like emotions, thoughts, or the desire for the third cake, you have a chance to experience nirvana, a state where everything unnecessary dissolves and only pure, calm awareness remains. And what's the best part? Once you've achieved it, there's no going back. Your personality will undergo an irreversible change. You will no longer be that person who gets angry because someone stood in line for coffee in front of you for too long. But here it is really important to first clarify one fundamental question. What do you actually expect from mindfulness? Does the image of a Zen monk in traditional robes sitting somewhere in a Japanese garden with a calm expression on his face while a stream flows behind his shoulder and butterflies do a meditative dance around him come to mind? If so, maybe we should do a little reality check here and lower our expectations. unless you're ready to abandon your duties and become a professional Zen practitioner who spends 15 hours a day meditating, eating rice balls in the most practical way possible, and feeding on the dew from the leaves of trees. Yes, it's a lovely idea, but let's face it, if your calendar full of emails, meetings, and shopping lists fits this scenario completely. Mindfulness in its extreme form, which we can call level 3, often does not correspond with our everyday reality surrounded by fast internet, coffee cups in one hand, and phone in the other. This is certainly not to criticize this lovely art of mindfulness. It has enormous potential to fundamentally transform your relationship with yourself, the world, and stressful situations. But that's why it's crucial to somehow manually incorporate mindfulness into your life in a way that has an effect without overwhelming or even disconnecting you from the reality of everyday life. For it may be that if you throw yourself into mindfulness with too much passion, you will fall into the mistaken belief that you have to become half enlightened and half life guru in order to be mindful enough. But there's one big but. If you get lost at this point and switch mindfulness into all or nothing mode, you run the risk of ending up more like a so-called mindfulness zombie instead of a wise and peaceful monk. What do I mean? A mindfulness zombie is, simply put, a person who has become so immersed in their mindful state that they have stopped truly living. Instead of being present, he ends up being a bit disconnected. He stops looking around, stops communicating, stops perceiving his surroundings, because all his focus turns inward. He won't give you any practical advice because he is so absorbed in himself that he has forgotten that the world outside still exists. You can recognize such a mindfulness zombie at first look. He usually has a glassy look when asked questions like, "What are you cooking today?" And when you ask him to help you with the ironing, he dreamily advises you to feel the beauty of the present moment instead of the ironing board. And that's exactly what we should avoid. Mindfulness is not about cutting yourself off from reality and creating your own Zen bubble. Quite the opposite. It's about how to better manage your life as it is. No mountaintop meditations where we feed only on the energy of the universe and snack on inner peace for breakfast. For we live in a modern world full of responsibilities, challenges, and unpredictable events. And that's where mindfulness is meant to find its place, in the chaos of everyday life, between the ringing phone and the delayed train. You don't need to be 100% perfect or spend days meditating for mindfulness to improve your life. Sometimes all it takes is just a few minutes a day, a moment to stop, breathe, and consciously acknowledge what you are doing. So if someone tells you that mindfulness requires you to fundamentally change your life from the ground up, thank them nicely, but choose a less extreme path. Learn to use mindfulness as a tool for mindful living, not as an excuse to escape the world. You don't have to be an enlightened person. It's enough to be a happy person who finds a moment here and there to connect with yourself and the world around you. Many articles, apps, and coaching workshops assure us that if we just stop for a moment, close our eyes, and watch our breathing, everything will suddenly be better. And you know what? To some extent, they're right. It really does help. Redirecting our attention to the sensations, feelings, and moods taking place in the here and now can offer a welcome relief, similar to a refreshing breeze on a hot summer day. It can relieve stress, lower the heart rate, open the way to greater emotional stability. And that's not a small thing, is it? But beware. This is only the beginning. Such mindfulness is like a basic swimming course. You learn to breathe above water, but you're not yet ready to dive into the depths of the sea. If we want to venture into those deeper waters, into the areas where our greatest fears, pains, and long-forgotten emotional wounds lurk, then a mere momentary perception of reality is simply not enough. This is where kindness and compassion come into play. If we want to get to a higher level of mindfulness, we have to be prepared to confront our own vulnerability. This is not something we can do just by meditating on a pillow in the light of a scented candle. On the contrary, it is a much deeper and often painful process, much like learning to walk again after an injury. And that is why kindness to yourself and compassion is so essential, because without them, all that mindfulness training can bring you frustration rather than relief. To heal old wounds, and we all have plenty of them, we must accept ourselves and all our flaws, figuratively and literally. And that's not easy at all. After all, how many of us tend to shame ourselves for our weaknesses, compare ourselves to others, and tell ourselves we're not good enough? How many of us have ever thought, if only I were smarter, prettier, more productive? Kindness and compassion for ourselves means we turn off this destructive debate in our heads once and for all. And now I'm stepping on thin ice, where I can get into a conflict with some of the proponents of the mindfulness cures all approach. It does not cure everything. Mindfulness at a basic level can be a great tool, but it is not a magic wand. True and deep healing often requires the involvement of other approaches, such as various forms of therapy, like humanistic or dynamic ones. It takes not only being mindful, but also being kind and being courageous, which means facing your own demons. So let's start simple. Let's learn kindness to ourselves and to the world. You may think you're a pretty nice person and there's not much to improve, but let's be realistic. Are you really treating yourself as well as you'd like? Do you take breaks when you're overworked? Or do you beat yourself up to keep working despite being tired? Do you forgive yourself for mistakes? Or do you constantly revisit them when you remember them sometime in the quiet of the night? And how much kindness do you give to strangers just in the queue at the cafe? Maybe we all have some work to do. And maybe that's actually a good thing. Because once we master this journey of kindness and compassion, everything else, including the higher levels of mindfulness, will finally start to make sense. And who knows? Maybe then, one day we can not only stand firmly on the ground, but take off.